Welcome to Roadside,
where we talk about the fascinating and sometimes disturbing history behind roadside attractions and unique destinations.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to Roadside.
I have a tiny bit more.
Yeah, it looks a little bit better.
It does look a little bit better.
Yeah.
All right. Hopefully this works.
Okay. My name's Abigail.
And my name is Janica.
And today is a me episode. But first, a little update. I got to visit, let me check what episode that was, actually.
She got to visit one of our places.
I got to visit one of the places that I've covered, which was really exciting. I've been to this place before, but I've never visited.
The specific.
Hello? Was that really character, that long ago?
I guess you could call it.
Yes, I got to visit Galesburg, Illinois, which I've been to before. But I actually got to visit St. Crescent in the Corpus Christi Church, which, if you don't remember, throwback to episode 29. I didn't realize that was that long ago.
Wow.
Where I covered St. Crescent and the tornado-saving baby that he is. So that was really exciting. I got to see him in person. I got to see the casket that they brought him over on the boat with and his whole kind of shrine area. That was really fun. My boyfriend's brother got married in Corpus Christi. Shout out to Dan and Reagan. Congratulations. Love you guys.
Congratulations.
That was really exciting for me. I just thought I had to let you guys know that I got to visit one of our places.
I also wanted to let you know about a comment that we had on one of our other episodes.
Oh, do I know about this?
No, we just got this the other day, so I'm just telling you.
Should I be happy?
This was actually on our YouTube channel.
Okay.
So this was for episode 26 for the St. Louis Plate Glass Factory. Do you remember
right.
that episode?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Very, very sad episode. Yeah. But the comment was, thank you for sharing this. I was the ambulance driver for Valley Park Fire District and witnessed the scene.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
You are a hero.
Absolutely. It says, to this day, I still see that little girl in that pit. Watching and listening to you all tell the story gave me some peace. Thank you.
Oh, I'm going to cry right now.
I know. I saw that and I was just like, oh my gosh. I can't even imagine what that must have been like.
And of course, that's going to stick with you forever, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But thank you, whoever commented, for all the work that you do.
Yes.
And for reaching out to us. We really appreciate you.
We do. We definitely appreciate you.
So. Yeah. You've done some great stuff. Whew. And we hope you have a great rest of your life.
Absolutely.
And you don't ever have to witness anything like that again.
Lord, I hope not. So there's a couple updates. So we'll let you digest that. And then Abigail's got
another
what she says is a really
sad
long episode today.
So going from one sad topic to another. Super fun.
Okay.
It will be kind of a long episode. Today we are talking about H.H. Holmes and the Chicago murder castle that he built.
Alrighty then.
Absolutely terrifying.
Absolutely.
A lot of my research came from one of our favorite podcasts, Morbid. They did a 5-part series on H.H. Holmes. I have kind of condensed it. So if you want a more detailed account, I recommend Morbid. They have a lot of stuff. They're amazing. We love you. But I also looked through some articles, some newspapers, and found some other good stuff.
All right.
So H.H. Holmes is known as America's first serial killer.
Gross.
He was very cunning and sometimes very charming. And he was a horrible, terrible human being and con artist.
Yeah.
Pretty, pretty gross. He was born Herman Webster Mudgett on May 16th, 1861 in Gilmanton, New Hampshire. Overall, his childhood seemed relatively normal. Although people knew him said that he was kind of a weird kid. Like nothing weird happened in his house growing up or anything that we know of, at least.
Yeah.
But neighbors and other townspeople said he was an odd kid. One neighbor of the Mudgetts said this about Herman. He always seemed to be by himself. He seemed to be very secretive. He was too arrogant and domineering to be popular with the children. Like, okay. Saying that about a kid, that really, you right. know, that shows that something's not right. A local shop owner in town, Ira, who Herman actually worked for, said this about him. Herman was a hard worker, but there were still some things about him I didn't like. He was too fond of money.
Huh. Okay.
And she said that money would sometimes just go missing when Herman was around.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's fun.
To be a kid and fond of money seems
yeah.
odd.
It's a little odd. Like, I never really thought about money as a kid.
Yeah.
I knew it existed. I was like, it's not, I'm just a kid. I'm just living life. I don't need money for anything.
Nathan always loved money, but it only in the sense that it translated to more Legos.
Yeah. And I think that's what I liked about money as a kid too. It could buy me more Barbies. Buy me more Bratz dolls. And she was not the only one that noticed his obsession with money. Other people that knew the young Herman would say the same thing about him. He also developed an interest in medicine at an early age. When he was young, he was terrified of the doctor's office, as kids are sometimes, especially back then, you know. The doctor in town was Dr. Wright, and he was very interested in anatomy and dissection, this doctor was. Nothing, like, off about this doctor. Okay. He just was super interested in his practice.
Okay.
One day, some of the older boys in town dragged Herman into the doctor's office and shoved him into a room with a skeleton.
Why?
And this skeleton had been set up with its arms, like, outstretched.
Okay.
So, like, as a kid, and you go into this dark room and there's just a skeleton, like,
aww.
Leaning towards you. He was terrified.
I mean, any kid would be.
Right. But he later said that this is also where his fascination with medicine began. Interesting. It was okay. also probably because doctors made a lot of money. Either way, he said this is where it started. Another thing that Herman became obsessed with is marriage. And that'll oh. be a common theme.
Okay.
Like, he started being interested in marriage at a very young age. It could also just be his interest in obtaining dowry money.
Oh.
okay. We'll get into that, too. His very first marriage proposal of many in his life came at 14.
Wow.
When he proposed to a young woman visiting their town, who was 14. Also 14. These girls' caretakers said no.
Oh, good.
That's not happening. I don't know if it was, we know that her caretakers said no, but I don't know if she accepted and they said no, or she said no and they also, you know, I'm not sure. But either right. way, they shut it down. She's 14. Although back then,
yeah, you know, but still,
they might let this 14-year-old be married off to a 30-year-old, but not to another 14-year-old.
Yeah.
You know. A few years later, Herman met and fell in love with a girl named Clara. Clara was known to be very pretty and from a well-off family with a lot of money. The two began officially dating at a strange time. They were at a church event, and another boy was hitting on Clara. And Herman okay. went up to him and threatened his life.
Oh.
And said, if you hit on Clara again, I'll kill you, basically. And Clara, I guess, thought that was nice. And they began dating that day. You know, I guess the thought of two men fighting over you, I don't know. But
I mean, I could definitely see, like, someone coming to your rescue and being like, excuse me?
Yeah, like if this boy was being creepy
but to
or
be
something.
Threatening their life, unless, of course, he was literally threatening her life or right. something. But okay.
Overall, I don't think that this guy had good intentions with threatening his life.
Yeah. I mean, knowing what I know about H.H. Holmes, yeah. I'm going to say probably not.
Yeah. So in July of 1878, the couple eloped. In Alton, New Hampshire, both at the age of 17.
Okay.
Both of their families were unaware of their marriage for several months. And when they did find out, they were not very happy, either of the families. Herman's mother said about the whole thing that Clara couldn't have found much worse.
Oh.
His mother said that.
Oh, God.
So, you know.
That's pretty
bad. Yeah. Clara's family was also not happy with Herman. He wasn't working a stable job, and they knew he wasn't going to be able to support her. They thought that they jumped into marriage too quickly. But people said that in the beginning, they seemed to be very in love. They seemed to be very happy. They had their son, Robert, in February of 1880.
Mm.
And this is when Herman decided, hey, maybe I should go find a job. he knew that he wanted to become a doctor, but he started actually working towards that, began studying with Dr. Wright from the skeleton office.
Okay.
He studied under Dr. Wright for 2 years before moving to Burlington, Vermont to study at the University of Vermont. He was said to be an okay student, like not super great, but not terrible. And while he was in Burlington, he stayed in a boarding house ran by a woman named Mrs. Brew. Mrs. Brew did not like Herman. She remembered
seems to be a theme.
Yeah, she remembered him being very flirty with other girls, even though he had told her that he was married.
Yeah.
Also, during this time, his wife and child were back in New Hampshire, and all of his school and boarding and everything was being paid for by Clara's family.
Oh.
So he just kind of like left them off to the side and said, I'm going to go do this. By the way, can you pay for everything? So Mrs. Brew didn't like his flirting, especially when he tried to flirt with her daughter.
Well, I don't blame her.
He also had a violent tendency, like when he got into a physical fight with his roommate, because his roommate had used Herman's mustache wax. Oh, and he said,
okay.
He said, uh-uh, not my mustache wax. And he like literally beat this boy up.
The hell?
Mrs. Brew also noticed his obsession with chemistry. He wanted to make his own medicine so that he could someday patent them and make a bunch of money from it. He would keep test tubes and strange liquids around the boarding house. Probably dangerous stuff that you're not supposed to take from your chemistry class.
Yeah.
But, it, you know, back in the day, they probably nobody cared. And then one day, Mrs. Brew was cleaning the house as usual. And she started to clean Herman's room. And she was sweeping by the bed when she noticed a smell.
Mm-mm.
And she swept the broom under the bed. And out from the bed comes a body.
Oh, God.
Of a baby.
Oh.
Less than a year old. And nobody really knows where he got this body from. Mm. He was obviously using it to study. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Okay.
Some people assume that he had brought it from a dissection class or something from school, but nothing's ever been confirmed, so nobody really knows where he got this body or why he would bring it. And his roommate didn't know about it. The house owner, obviously, she didn't know about it.
Yeah.
And 2 years after he started this school, he decided to transfer to University of Michigan in Ann Arbor to continue. And Mrs. Brew said, thank God, get out of here. And while he was there, he moved Clara and their son Robert out to live with him in Ann Arbor. They moved together into a boarding house where they lived. And everybody remembers Clara, super nice, very loving, while Herman was just a piece of shit. Nobody liked him. Clara would sometimes go around the house with black eyes. Aww. They would argue very often. And this continued until a few months before Herman graduated, so a little more than a year. When Clara decided she was done, she was going to take Robert and move back to New Hampshire with her family. And she said she knew little of her husband in the years following this and did not try to contact him.
Yeah.
This was definitely for the best, because I think if she had stayed with him, her life would not have been as long. So now that Clara was gone, so was her money.
Yeah.
And Herman picked up some odd jobs just to pay for school. He graduated in 1884 and relocated to a town in New York. Another little, a little side note here. He began taking French lessons at this time from a woman named Minnie Everett. But this didn't last long. She stopped after a few sessions, saying later, there is something lurking in that man's character that time will reveal. I do not like him. I firmly believe that he would commit murder.
Oh.
And you got that from, like, three French lessons?
Wow, Minnie's got some intuition there.
Right, for real. She's like, I know what's going to happen, and I need to get the hell away from this guy.
She saw something dark in him.
She sure did. So in New York, he opened his own medical practice, was still trying to create his own medicine to patent. And while he was here, several women began sharing stories of creepy and unwanted advances.
Ugh.
Very Ugh. Stalkery. Many of the women he interacted with throughout his life would go missing.
Mm.
And a lot of them were not investigated because these women were from, quote, a house of ill repute.
Oh, Jesus.
So they were just not investigated because they weren't wealthy white women.
Yeah.
The men of the town would also talk about how Herman never paid for anything. Never paid his debts. His home landlord, as well as his medical office landlord, couldn't help but notice this. And he's got the money for it. He's a doctor. He's got patients. But instead of paying them, he would just skip town in 1885 and move to Philadelphia with a new name, H.H. Holmes, and leave all of his debts behind. Yeah. In Philadelphia, he got a job working at a psychiatric hospital, but soon abandoned the job after a local boy died taking a medicine given to him by Holmes.
Oh.
And nobody in Philadelphia would hire him after that, obviously.
Good.
So he moved to Chicago. He's just bouncing all around.
He literally just ruins his reputation completely in one city. I'll just move to another city and start over. No big deal.
That'll be a common theme. So he got this job in Chicago working as a drug clerk at a pharmacy called Holton Drugs, owned by an elderly man, Mr. Holton. Mr. Holton was very sick at the time, so the shop was being run by his wife, Mrs. Holton. Mr. Holton soon passed away, and he left the pharmacy to his wife. Mrs. Holton, I guess, really liked Holmes, said that he was very charming, and he was able to convince her to let him buy the pharmacy.
Mm.
So he took over the pharmacy, now called H.H. Holmes Pharmacy. Terrifying.
Yeah, I don't want anything from there.
No. But the Holton Pharmacy had been around for a long time. They had a lot of repeat patients. So when people started coming around and not seeing Mrs. Holton, they would ask, where's Mrs. Holton? You know, I haven't seen her in a while. And he would just tell everyone she took a long trip to California.
I don't think she did.
And she was never seen again.
Oh.
While he was in Chicago, he began courting a woman named Murda. He is still married.
Oh,
with
yeah.
With a child. After only a few months of dating, he proposed to Murda. And they got married.
Cool.
On January 29th, 1887,
hey,
they got married.
That's my birthday.
Oh, January 28th.
Oh, okay.
Not birthday.
That's not my birthday. Whew!
That's good. So, like his marriage with Clara, everything started off great. Murda was helping him run the pharmacy. She loved him. But she remained living with her parents for a while. And she soon gave birth to their daughter, Lucy.
Oh, so now he has two kids. And two wives.
And two wives.
All right.
Murda's parents began to worry a little bit about Holmes, who their daughter had married.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was never around, ever.
Yeah.
He would never visit Lucy or Murda.
Aww.
And he would always...
I mean, probably good. But...
Yeah, probably good. But he would always play it off as like, oh, the pharmacy's just so busy. You know, I'm just this busy, successful doctor. So, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Around this time, Holmes began thinking up an elaborate plan for a house to build. And there was an empty lot across the street from the pharmacy that he bought in 1888. Although the deed was registered under one of his eventually 40 aliases.
Holy shit.
And the deed was registered under H.S. Campbell.
Okay.
Which is Holmes.
40 aliases? I wonder if that's even all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, did they even discover all of
right?
them? 40?
I wonder that too, because like, and how do they even find that he has these aliases, you know?
Wow.
Like, that's crazy. This was also around the time that Holmes began some bigger scams. He had talked before about how he wanted to commit insurance fraud. In college, he had talked to...
Oh, you're just casual. Guess what I want to do today? I would like to commit insurance fraud.
Right? Just for fun. Like, you know.
Oh, I was just going to, like, go to the county fair, but all right.
Yeah.
Like, just talk
right?
about
like, in college, he had told casual. One of his college friends, like, oh, you know, it would be so easy to commit insurance fraud for life insurance money. Like, with these bodies all around here, we can just say that, like,
what?
One of these is someone else. And get that person's, like, fake their death.
Oh, my God.
And his friend was like, yeah, sure, buddy. Yeah,
well,
that's great. That's really awesome.
Sure, great idea, dude. Let's
yeah,
do it.
Yeah, that sounds really awesome.
Oh, my God.
That sounds great.
And afterwards, we'll go grab lunch.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, he had already conned his way into two marriages and a pharmacy.
Yeah.
And now he was ready for something a little bit bigger.
Okay.
So he contacted his old friend from medical school that he had talked to about committing insurance fraud, Dr. Leacock, and asked him to come visit Chicago so they could catch up.
Okay.
And, you know, just shoot the shit and do what doctors do.
Uh-huh.
So Dr. Leacock arrived. They had some fun times. Holmes gave him a large dose of poison.
Oh, no.
And he died.
Oh, no.
Which, like, this is the friend that you were like, hey, we should commit insurance fraud together. But this friend didn't know this is what he meant by committing insurance fraud.
But why?
Well, he then took Dr. Leacock's body back to his home in Michigan and made it look like he had died accidentally in his home.
Okay.
He then collected the $40,000 life insurance policy.
So he had a life insurance policy on him.
I guess so, yes.
All right.
Also, hold on. Let me look this up really quick.
Wow, that's going to be a big number. Damn. $40,000 in, what, 1888 or something like that?
So.
Oh, God. Yeah.
$40,000 in 1888 today would be about $1,032,000.
Why are you hesitating?
Because I'm just estimating.
Okay.
So it's about $1.3 million.
That's
a
insane.
Lot of money.
And you're just and he's just casually like, dude, just
oh
come
gosh,
up here.
I want to see you. Like, what? Let's go. Let's.
And how do you just get a freaking life insurance policy for an old friend back from home? Like what the
there
fuck?
There was a lot.
And then you just randomly take him back home and make it look like he accidentally died and collect that money.
Yeah, pretty much.
Jesus Christ.
Back in the day, I guess it was really easy to take life insurance policies out on people, which will become a common theme. My next note here, this is not the last time he would commit this crime. Holmes used this life insurance money to build a murder castle.
Yeah.
Woo!
Not
he
woo.
Made up floor plans and hired numerous people to help him build, constantly firing them and rehiring new people so nobody would really know what was going on inside this castle, you know? They'd have some people build one part of the house and then be like, okay, next person, just to keep the confusion. So on the first floor was retail shops, a pharmacy, a jewelry store, just for him to bring in extra money. A lot of them were just like scams, you know?
Yeah.
And also, they were there for him to employ more women.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, really fun. The second and third floors would be apartments to rent. He did have an apartment on the third floor for himself. But it's all the little details that were the worst.
Yeah.
There were trap doors. There was a gas chamber.
Yeah.
Doors and stairs that would lead to nowhere. Hidden rooms and closets. Soundproof vaults with iron walls.
That's so sad.
Rooms with no doors. A room with five doors. A dummy elevator to the basement. And also a large chute that led to the basement. Large enough for, say, a body to fit in.
God, it just all makes me
it's so gross.
Nauseous.
Yeah, it's so gross. In the basement, there were lots of fun things, including operating tables, a lot of surgical tools, a large kiln.
Oh, God.
And pits of acid.
Oh, God.
Yep. As well as, like, a lot of poisons and chemicals and just sitting around for his use.
Mm.
His murder castle was finished in 1891, and he began looking for a right-hand man to aid him in his schemes and murders.
Ugh.
And he found this man in Benjamin Peitzel.
Oh, yeah.
Who was also a con man. Peitzel was wanted in Indiana for paying with bad checks and was on the run with his wife and four kids in Chicago where he met Holmes.
Ugh.
Yeah. So Holmes started to get into some trouble with the steel and other companies they were using for the castle because he wasn't obviously paying them for anything.
Oh, well, yeah, why would he?
Why? Great question. So the steel company actually tried to sue him, Aetna Steel Company.
Okay.
And he was like, well, I'm still going to not pay. So to avoid this, I'm just going to take my name off the deed and put my mother-in-law's name on it, Murda's mother.
Oh. One of his mother-in-laws.
Speaking of, now that the house was finished, he moved Murda, Lucy, and his mother-in-law into the castle, into their own apartment.
Okay. Not into his apartment.
No.
Oh, he has his own apartment.
He has his own apartment.
Okay, then.
Yeah. And he would actually later set up some kind of alarm system around his apartment, like to warn him if anyone was coming to his apartment.
Oh.
In case he was in the middle of anything.
Gee, I wonder why.
And had to stop what he was doing.
Okay.
Which could be a lot of things.
Yeah.
During the construction of the castle, Holmes was involved in all kinds of cons, such as selling mineral water that he advertised to cure anything.
Liar.
Yep. And conning widows out of their pension money. Super fun.
What the hell?
Yeah, he was a real dirtbag. A real
piece absolutely
of human garbage. Like, he just conned anybody and everybody. Like, I definitely think he killed the couple at the pharmacy that he
bought
the pharmacy from.
Oh, yeah.
Like, maybe the older man who was already sick died of natural consequences, but his wife definitely was killed. Never seen again.
Yeah, I don't think she's just vacationing in California.
I don't think so either. Which is really unfortunate because she had told a lot of her customers that she wanted to go to California so bad. And he used that as, you know.
Right.
He also conned this married couple who came to work for him, Ned and Julia. Ned and Julia were new to Chicago and looking for work to support themselves and their daughter. Holmes gave them jobs in the jewelry store on the first floor of the castle and soon began to show an interest in Julia. And him being this very charming man wooed her, and she left Ned for Holmes.
Huh.
Ned was so desperate to get Julia back that he wanted to do this big grand gesture, and he bought the pharmacy from Holmes to show Julia, hey, I'm a business owner now, like, I'm successful, and, you know, try to get her back with their daughter, you know.
Okay.
Little did he know that when he bought the pharmacy, he also bought all of the pharmacy's debts.
I was just going to say.
That Holmes never once paid. So this man is drowning in debts. His wife is not interested in getting back together with him, even a little bit. By then, she was in a full-blown affair with Holmes, who already had two wives and two children that she didn't know about. And he was having this affair with her in the castle where his wife, child, one of his wives, and one of his children, and one of his mother-in-laws were staying.
Jesus, yeah.
But he would have his affair with Julia up in his own apartment, which is part of the reason why he had that security system set up.
Yeah.
So if his wife ever comes wandering looking for him, and he's in the middle of things with Julia, he can stop and shove her in a closet or something. Soon after this, he moved Murda, his daughter, and his mother-in-law into a different house because he didn't want them around.
They're just too close now.
They are too close now. So he moved them into a different house a few miles away so that he could have the whole place to himself with his new girlfriend, Julia. And he was promising to marry her.
Oh, God. You're already married, dude. Mm-hmm. Twice.
Yeah.
Like, literally at the same time.
Yeah. But he kept promising and promising, but he never made an official proposal. But Julia ended up moving into the apartment with him and her daughter.
Okay.
So by November 1891, Julia was pregnant with Holmes' baby.
Oh, God.
And she said, okay, now you gotta marry me. For real, this time. Because, you know, it's the 1800s.
Yeah.
And he said, I'll marry you, but only if you get an abortion and you allow me to perform it.
Oh, God, no.
She's so desperate for him that she agrees. God.
Women, just no. Never just be that fucking desperate just for really, anyone.
No.
Anyone.
For real. And unlucky for her, there was already an operating room in the castle. So he took her to this operating room and told her that he was going to sedate her with chloroform to perform the operation. But instead of sedating her with the chloroform, he just killed her with it. And then he did the same with her daughter.
No.
Whose name was Pearl. And then he sold Julia's body.
What?
to a medical college.
Oh, God. Okay.
And nobody really knows what happened to Pearl.
And they were just...
Back in the day, you could just do that. And this wouldn't be the last time.
And there was no questions.
Yeah.
Not where did you get this body?
Nope.
Just, cool, thanks for the dead body.
Yep. We'll use this in our dissection class next week.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Nobody really knew what happened to Pearl either. Holmes told anyone that asked that Julia and Pearl moved to Iowa. And of course, Pearl's father never heard from either of them again.
Oh.
I know. Meanwhile, while all this was going on, Benjamin Peitzel was in rehab for alcoholism. And while he was there, he met a young woman in the town named Emmeline. And he thought that this girl was just Holmes's type.
Oh, no.
So he sent this girl to Chicago to work for Holmes as a typist. And Holmes's usual pattern continued. He began a romantic relationship with her for a little while. And then he got bored and she mysteriously disappeared.
Oh, God.
He told people that she ran away and got married to another man.
But funny how everybody runs away from him, according to him.
Mm-hmm. You would think that even that would be a red flag, you know?
You would think.
But Emmeline's parents were really concerned because she usually wrote a few times a week and she hadn't been writing. Soon after, a neighbor spotted Holmes and Peitzel carrying a large case out of the castle. And Holmes sold another body to a different medical school.
Jesus.
He did this frequently with a lot of women. And this was around the time of the Chicago World's Fair. So a lot of people were flocking to Chicago looking for temporary housing, looking for temporary work. And Holmes was like, yeah, absolutely. I've got this big castle. I've got like 3 stores. Like, come work for me. Come live in this apartment. Like, woo. Especially if they were pretty girls.
Ugh.
So this is what happened with Minnie Williams. Holmes had met Minnie when he was in Boston. And he had taken her out to dinner a few times, to the theater, like other dates. But she knew him to be Harry Gordon, another alias.
Oh, Lord.
And she was smitten with him. Because, again, he was known to be super charming, like, knew how to get what he wanted. He had spent a lot of money on her, shown her around the town. But the only problem is that Holmes lived in Chicago, and she lived in Boston with her wealthy uncle. Both of her parents had died at a young age, so she was living with her uncle.
Okay.
Her and her sister. Soon after, her uncle passed away and left her a lot. A whole estate in Texas, valued between $50,000 and $100,000 at the time.
Uh-oh.
Which today would be between $1.5 and $3 million.
Mm. Don't tell H.H. Holmes.
Unfortunately, that's what she did.
Yeah.
She used some of that money that she had gotten to move to Chicago.
Ugh.
To see more of this Harry Gordon that she was so in love with. And of course, she showed up at his house and he was thrilled to see her.
Oh, I bet.
Especially when she told him about all this money that she now had.
I'm sure that's what he's thrilled about.
And he said, well, why don't you come work for me as my personal secretary and move into my castle?
Yeah, why don't you?
That just sounds really awesome. Bring all your money with you. Yeah, so they began courting and things got a little bit more serious. Of course, he promised to marry her. And in 1893, he proposed to her.
Mm.
He already has 2 wives and 2 kids.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, this is very exciting
plus
for Minnie.
One kid that he has murdered.
Yeah. This was, of course, very exciting to Minnie, and she invited her sister, Nanny, to move to Chicago to be with her for her wedding and just to stay with her afterward and live in the castle with them. Holmes and Minnie went through a wedding ceremony, but it was never officially recorded.
Went through a wedding ceremony. Yeah.
But it was never officially recorded because, of course, he is still married to 2 other women.
Yeah.
However, for some reason, this unofficial marriage still gives him access to all of her inheritance.
Oh, wow. How does that happen?
I don't know. I really don't.
Ugh.
So immediately he convinced her to sign the deed to her estate to a man named Alexander Bond.
And who the fuck is Alexander Bond?
Try to guess.
H.H. Holmes?
It really is.
That's crazy.
So he convinced her to do this in 1893, and then Alexander Bond signed the deed over to Benton Lyman, who was...
H.H. Holmes?
Benjamin Peitzel.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
Their plan at this point was to eventually build a new murder house on the Texas property.
Gross.
Yep. But Holmes wanted Peitzel to have it for now so that he could send Peitzel and one of Peitzel's sons to Texas to start getting things going. But eventually, he wanted the deed back in his name.
Okay.
And that was the deal, that Peitzel would sign it back into his name eventually, for now, get things started in Texas, and in the meantime, in exchange, Holmes promised to take care of Peitzel's wife and his other children.
It's not a good choice, I don't think.
Yeah. The switches around were all confusing. I don't know. That's what happened, but I don't know why they had to do it like that. Like, why couldn't he just keep it in his name the first time? I don't know. Around this time, a fire broke out in the Chicago murder castle. Strangely, though, Holmes had just the day before moved out all of his important documents.
Oh.
And all of his expensive things.
That was convenient.
Really strange how that happened that way. But of course, the fire broke out and he got to collect insurance money.
Of course. And keep all of his important documents and expensive items.
Yeah. One night, while Minnie was out of the house, Holmes decided Nanny doesn't need to be around anymore.
Oh.
So he put her in one of those sealed vaults.
Oh, God.
And just left her there.
What the fuck?
So she eventually suffocated. And then soon after this, Minnie went mysteriously missing, too.
Oh, he is so fucking disgusting.
Oh, it's just about to get worse. Later, he would tell the police that Minnie killed Nanny. In a jealous rage.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Because she thought that Holmes was going to get with Nanny. Of course, all of this was just to collect Minnie's inheritance and life insurance and such.
Gross.
Disgusting, actually.
Yeah.
So now he has three wives, one of them passed.
Uh-huh.
But guess what? He started courting another woman.
Of course he did.
This is Georgiana, which is such a pretty name, although I don't like Georgiana.
No?
No. The two of them started this life on the run from state to state because investigators were getting close.
Okay.
Insurance companies were noticing that they had been defrauded.
Oh.
Police were getting involved and they were kind of...
Got it. Someone's catching
on. Paying attention to him. So he was like, yeah, we gotta get out of here. I loved this murder castle, but I'm ready to go.
I hope he wasn't calling it a murder castle.
I don't think that he was at the time. I'm sure he wasn't to his many wives. Like, hey, you want to come move in with me into my murder castle? No, yeah, I don't.
I'd be like, that's a red flag.
Yeah, he had quite a few of those. Georgiana, of course, had just come into some money.
Oh, really?
Really odd.
Funny how he always goes after women with money.
Mm-hmm. Her grandmother had just passed away, and it can be assumed that that's what Holmes was eventually after. Georgiana does survive.
Oh, okay.
In the middle of being on the run, state to state, city to city, Holmes made a brief stop back in Chicago to take out a life insurance policy. Not for his new wife.
Oh.
For Benjamin.
Oh.
Yeah. This whole part. The life insurance policy was for $10,000.
That's not very much.
Yeah, not compared to the other ones that he was,
right?
You know?
So I'm like, this is like 5 years later or something like that.
Yeah, which today would be $35,000 or $350,000.
Yeah, so I just feel like, I don't know, maybe he didn't want to raise too much suspicion.
Maybe, but remember, Peitzel does also have a whole estate in his name right now. So that's there as well.
Yeah.
So the new plan, build a new murder castle in Texas on the estate that they had swindled from Minnie, of course.
Yes.
Because he could no longer be in his Chicago murder castle. So he had sent Peitzel and his son Howard to Texas, get everything done. But Holmes was getting a little bit upset with Peitzel because he wasn't signing the deed back to him fast enough. So Holmes sent Peitzel a letter. I don't think he sent it from Holmes, but he was the one that sent it.
Got it.
Sent a letter threatening to tell the state of Indiana where Peitzel is wanted for his crimes. Where he was, unless he signed the deed back to Holmes. Which, like, obviously.
Well, like, who else would it have been from then?
That's so stupid.
Just some random person.
Right. Like, you just get this letter from this guy named Bob or something, and it's like, I'm going to tell the Indiana police unless you sign this over to this random dude.
Yeah.
Like, no, this is obviously from you.
Right.
Like, the fuck? But Pytzel signed the deed over to Holmes.
Of course he didn't.
Unfortunately, they all had to flee soon after this because they weren't paying the bills for the construction again. The steel company, you know, the whatever else they needed to use, not paying anything. So they had to go on the run again, use more aliases, move somewhere else.
What a fucking life.
And they moved to St. Louis.
No, go away.
We don't want you. Please get out. Leave.
Bye.
Please.
I knew that he was in St. Louis at some point.
Yeah, we don't want you here. Please go away. In St. Louis, they met Benjamin's wife, Carrie, and their other children. And here they came up with another scheme.
Okay.
They were going
to... Don't they get exhausted from this lifestyle? Right? Jesus Christ.
I'm so tired. I'll just move to France and like...
Dude, just chill. Have a beer and just like relax just hang for out. A minute, okay? Yeah.
Although Pytzel doesn't need any more beer.
True. Take a cold iced tea, okay?
Yeah, you'll be fine. Maybe some lemon in there to zest it up. They decided we're going to fake Pytzel's death.
What? Oh, Pytzel is in on this one.
Yes.
Got it. Okay.
He's in on it. He's like, okay, which that's so stupid of him.
I mean,
you know what this man has done in the past. You have helped him. You have provided him with people to kill for their life insurance. So, like, you would think that he would know what's coming.
Right.
But of course, Holmes is promising to give some of that life insurance to Benjamin and his family.
Yep.
So they decide, we're going to fake his death, get the money, flee the country.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. In the meantime, Pytzel and Holmes need to hide out for a little bit. So they move to Philadelphia.
My God, how many... There's like crisscrossing all over the place.
And there's places that they were in that I'm not even naming in here because there's probably like 20 to 30.
Yeah.
They hide out in Philadelphia, commit some little small schemes on the side to make some money. And while they're in Philadelphia, Pytzel gets a message from his wife, Carrie, who's still back in St. Louis with their kids, saying, hey, one of the kids is sick. You need to come home and help me.
Mm.
It's urgent. It's at the 1800s. If your kid's sick,
They're probably going to die. Yeah, unfortunately, yes.
So Pytzel went to Holmes. He says, my kid is sick. I need to go. I can't help you with any more schemes right now.
I bet Holmes took that really well.
He was really thrilled.
I bet. Yeah. He was like supportive.
He was
like,
he was a really good friend.
You should probably head home immediately and take care of your kid.
Yeah. Let me give you some money help out with that. No, of course not. He decided, well, I know we were going to fake your death, but we're doing it for the real thing now.
Yeah. I think he had that feeling anyway.
Yeah.
Don't think it was ever fake in Holmes's head.
No. He found Pytzel in some laboratory or something, basically passed out drunk. And he knew that he was going to be passed
out drunk.
He really
didn't need more beer.
He really didn't. And Holmes knew that he was going to be passed out drunk because he's stressed out about his kid. And he knows that this is the first thing that Pytzel goes to.
Oh.
So he waited until Pytzel got passed out drunk.
God, he's just like worried about his kid. I mean, I know he's like not the best human being either, but
yeah, I know. Like, Pytzel really sucks.
He does really suck
a lot, but like, his family doesn't deserve this.
Yeah, that's true.
He found him passed out drunk, poisoned him. Ugh. And then he took the body. I'm not sure exactly where he took it, but he burned the body and then set the whole scene up to look like some random explosion happened or something like that.
Like a lab explosion?
Yes.
Okay.
That had killed him. And then he was going to go to the insurance and, you know,
Collect his money. Why does his wife get that?
Great question.
Yeah.
Well, he was actually the one that took out the insurance policy earlier, remember?
I know. Still.
Still.
Doesn't seem correct. Whatever.
But in this world, only men get money. So.
Yeah.
So word got back to Carrie pretty quick
that
her husband had died.
Ugh.
But Holmes...
And she's dealing with a sick kid, too. Ugh.
And they have a baby, too, at this point.
Ugh, that poor woman.
Holmes went back to St. Louis, and she was just...
Oh, no. Stay away from her.
Right. She was just so upset, obviously.
Yeah.
And he's like, whoa, no way. He's not dead. He's just in hiding. This is the whole plan, remember?
Ugh.
And tells her...
Well, she knew that this was a setup.
This was the plan.
What a jackass.
I think she's just, I think for her, she's just ready to get the money and move out of the country and leave it all behind.
Yeah.
Because she's not involved in any of this, really.
Okay.
She just, unfortunately, married a con artist.
Yeah.
So he's like, no, 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 everything's fine. Like, he's just hiding out somewhere. Once we get the insurance money, we'll try to reunite everybody. But the only thing is, someone needs to identify the body, and they won't let me do it.
Oh, God.
And she has a baby. The body's in Philadelphia. They're in St. Louis.
Yeah.
She can't really go with the baby. So he says, why don't you let me take your oldest daughter, Alice.
Oh, God, no.
Who's like 16 at this point, to identify her father's body.
Those are all bad choices.
Very bad. Carrie, I think, was just so desperate to get her family back together. Alice didn't think that this was actually her father. She kind of knew what was going on. They went to identify the body. Alice saw everything.
Mm.
And the insurance company was having a hard time agreeing that this is actually Benjamin Peitzel.
Okay.
So they were sketched out by Holmes.
I mean,
because he had just taken out this life insurance policy.
Right.
He's not family. He's the one that's getting the money. You know, right. They're just kind of, they don't totally believe it. But Alice comes in. She says, this is my father. And they're like, okay. He gets the $10,000 from the insurance company, which he had promised to give to the Peitzels.
Mm-hmm.
Guess how much money he gave to Carrie?
Nothing.
$500.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
What a saint.
Yeah. Which, like, don't get me wrong, is a lot of money back then, but you have...
Not when you have $10,000.
Yeah. She has a sick kid.
Yeah.
Her husband, unbeknownst to her, is dead.
Yeah.
And three other children.
Yeah.
He convinced Carrie to send her other children, besides the baby, to live with Alice and him, while Carrie was sent on a wild goose chase after her husband.
Ugh.
Holmes sent her to several cities around the states, telling her, oh, your husband's going to be in Chicago, your husband's going to be in Philadelphia, your husband's going to be wherever. And each time she would get to that city, he'd be like, oh, he just left.
Oh, God.
And he's over here now. So she went on this absolutely crazy chase, which must be terrifying.
Yeah.
It's literally just her and a baby chasing after her husband, who she hasn't seen in months. All of her kids are with this strange man.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just really wanted to reunite her family. She was so desperate for this. But she was just being pushed off from city to city, wondering if her kids were okay because she hadn't gotten any letters from them.
Jesus.
And hoping to find her husband. Meanwhile, Holmes is kind of doing the same thing, jumping around the city or the country with Carrie's kids. And he would like rent a house or an apartment for a couple days with the kids, move somewhere else, rent another house or apartment, move somewhere else. And the oldest is like 16. So they're very right. young kids. And they were also starting to worry about their mother because they hadn't received any letters from her either.
Mm-hmm.
The truth was that both of the kids and Carrie had been writing to each other. But Holmes kept all of the letters that he got in the mail from Carrie and never sent any of the letters from the kids.
What a jackass.
And literally in one of the last letters that Alice sent, she said, why are you not writing back to us?
Oh.
This is fucked up mind games at this point. You already have the money. Why are you still...
There's no point to him doing
this. Why are you still doing this? It just for funsies?
Literally him being an asshole.
I think this is him just psychologically torturing this family.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just for his own fun.
Right. And I think that's where it started, just for his own fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then he realized moving around like this with kids is expensive.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to deal with the kids anymore.
Oh.
So he did what he does. And he murdered two of the children by poison.
Oh my God.
Two of the youngest children. The only one left was Alice.
Oh, the fuck.
And the baby that was still with Carrie. I'm not going to go into how all of that happened because that's fucked up.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly where Alice was or where Carrie was when he was arrested, but he was in Boston when he got arrested.
Okay.
I think maybe Alice had gone back to her mother. I'm not sure. Alice stayed alive. So he was arrested for fraud. Nobody knew about any of the murders.
Oh my God.
One of the counts that he was arrested for was the faked death of Benjamin Peitzel. The insurance company did not believe that that body was Benjamin Peitzel.
Oh my gosh.
Holmes was so happy to tell them about how he faked killing Benjamin Peitzel.
I bet.
He's like, oh, that's just some random body that I found, you know? Benjamin's actually hiding somewhere. That's not Benjamin.
Jesus Christ.
What he told them was that he somehow acquired this body. How do you do that? I don't know. I don't want to know.
No.
I don't want to know. And he had transported the body in a suitcase to the place where he had faked Benjamin's death and set up the scene. And that little detail in the suitcase was what got him caught.
Oh.
Because if the body had been transported in the suitcase, it would have been kind of folded up.
Oh, yeah.
And because of science and stuff, it would not have been possible to lay the body flat again.
Yep.
But the body given to the insurance company had been laid flat.
Okay.
He had just gotten himself caught for murder.
Oh.
He lied his way into confessing, basically.
Wow.
So the investigation kept going. They kept finding more and more and more bodies in Holmes's trail. 40 aliases, a million cons. And once Holmes realized that he had been caught and there was no going back, he started telling all of his stories.
What? He just started talking?
He confessed everything. He confessed shit he didn't do.
What?
He lied and lied and lied. And some of it was truth, but most of it was lies.
Why?
Because he's a piece of shit. That's why. Because he wants, at this point, he's like, there's no going back. I'm probably going to die. I might as well go out with a bang.
Okay.
I might as well be known as this infamous whatever. Yeah. But a lot of these stories were contradictory. It's hard to know what can actually be believed of him and exactly how many people he killed. Some articles will say that he killed upward of 200 people. But that's very exaggerated, according to experts. Holmes ultimately confessed to 27 murders.
Jesus Christ.
Although experts do say it's probably more than that. Ugh. But it's not at the 200 mark. The trial came, and Holmes's lawyers didn't know what to do because there was so much evidence against him for fraud and for murder that they were like, I don't know what to do, man.
You're screwed, dude. I don't know what to tell you.
So they basically let him defend himself.
Oh, God.
Because they're like, I'm sorry, dude.
Okay.
You're done. Carrie Peitzel came to the stand to testify about all
this
of the
poor lady.
Terrible shit that he put her through.
Oh.
I hope that she ended up on a nice, secluded farm somewhere, living a peaceful life with her two remaining children.
Yeah.
Because
Jesus.
That is so fucked
the
up.
The trauma.
Yeah. The psychological
torture. At least the baby
was
a baby and didn't have to deal with the trauma.
Yeah. But poor Alice,
Jesus,
too.
I
and
know.
Alice hated Holmes.
Oh,
in
God.
Some of her early, in some of her early letters, she wrote that she thought he was weird and creepy and she did not like him.
And I bet he read every single one of those.
She said that he called her, like, baby.
Oh, God.
Did all that creepy shit.
Gross.
Also, his most recent wife, Georgiana, took the stand to defend him.
What?
Because she...
Why?
I think that Woman. She was kind of in on... I don't think she was involved, but I think she knew what was happening. Because she knew some of his aliases. She knew that they were on the run.
She was probably being brainwashed by that asshole,
too. She knew
too.
That he was married.
She knew he was married to other women?
Oh, my God. In the end... He was found guilty.
Good.
And sentenced to death by hanging. So on May 7th, 1896, Holmes was asked if he had any last words. And I'm going to read them to you.
Oh, God.
He said, quote, "In fact, I would make no statement at this time, except that by not speaking, I would appear to acquiesce in life and my execution. I only want to say that in the extent of my wrongdoings and taking human life consisted in the deaths of two women. They having died at my hands as a result of criminal operations. I wish to state, however, that there will be no misunderstanding hereafter. I am not guilty of taking the life of any of the Peitzel family, the three children or father of Benjamin F. Peitzel, of whose death I am now convinced and for which I am today going to be hanged. That is all."
But I thought I didn't want to make a statement.
Right?
Dude, just don't fucking talk if you don't want to make a statement. We don't want to hear
it anyway. Like,
right?
We don't want to hear you speak.
Yeah.
He was then hanged and the world was rid of his terrible, terrible presence. Yeah. The murder castle in Chicago was destroyed in the 1930s. Good. It was torn down.
In the 1930s? They waited that long?
It was still there.
Holy shit. Like 40 years
it was there. And wow. I think I saw in one article, but I don't totally know if this is true, that one of the later owners of the murder castle turned it into a kind of weird, creepy museum.
Oh.
About the murders and stuff.
They should have just torn that down immediately.
That's what I was thinking too. There are also some sources that say it burned to the ground, but I found a source that said it did not burn. It got torn down in the 30s. The fire was actually the one that he had set earlier in life. In its place now is a post office.
Huh.
In Chicago, which is said to be very, very haunted.
I was going
to
say, is that haunted post office?
A lot of the employees say that they very frequently see shadowy figures and hear strange sounds. Mm. And it is said that the basement of the post office is actually the original basement of the murder house.
Ew.
Yeah. That post office is there if you want to visit that.
I don't.
Nothing. No, thank you. That is H.H. Holmes and his awfulness.
And his murder castle.
And his
murder
four house, wives.
Whatever he called it.
Murder castle, yeah.
He never built anything in Texas, though, right?
I don't think so. They might have, like, started, but it was never finished. It was never even close to completing, I think.
Okay.
You're welcome, and I'm sorry.
I've read the book, The Devil in the White City, so I did know a lot about that, but I tend to forget about things. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just like, it's kind of all so hits gross. Me again. Yeah. And he's you don't want to retain all that information.
No, I do not want to remember Herman Webster Mudgett even a little bit.
No.
Hope that he is rotting in hell.
I do too.
You can follow us on TikTok at Roadside Podcast.
Instagram at Roadside Pod.
Facebook at Roadside Podcast.
YouTube at Roadside Pod.
And our website is roadsidepodcast.com.
And you can email us at roadsidepod@gmail.com.
Please do that. I would love that.
And you can share with your friends, leave a review.
Yes, please do.
All of that.
Yep. Sorry about that horrible episode, but we love you. Thank you for listening. And keep finding the thrill in the mysterious.
Bye.
Farewell.